Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley. And as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today is Tell Del Tuesday. And my guest that I have today is really close to me. Really close to me. He lives just a few miles away from my house, which is very unusual since we have about 50,000 clients all over the country. To have one that actually lives down the street from me is something quite unusual. But with us today is Scott Sessoms. Scott, welcome.
Thank you.
Why don't you just start by sharing everybody, you know, radio show's been on for 35 years. This comment's always been, people are living a life of quiet desperation. And what I mean by that is on the surface, everything's fine. You got a great family. You got a great job. You know, and you and your wife had great jobs. You have kids. Your life's perfect. It's beautiful. But then something clicks that makes you want to look for something different. Why don't you share with us what you did before that click and then what that click was that made you start looking for something else?
Yeah. So I was an IT corporate IT manager for about 18 years, and it's funny that I was in corporate IT and been through a lot of cycles through corporations, through software and oil, and was looking for something to do that I had to physically do myself, that can't be outsourced, that has to be done here, that's pretty recession resistant. So I got into pest control, started a pest control company. Ran that business for about 8 years and then ended up selling it. And in that time, we started investing into real estate. And we're looking for that passive income to help us get out of that corporate job and to be more independent.
What made you decide to sell off your pest control business? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so done it for a while, and then it just timing kind of lined up. You know, sometimes there's things that just that come right in front of you, opportunities that happen, and sometimes you catch them, sometimes you miss them. So I had an opportunity within Lifestyles to kind of move into a lead position, and it sounded like a really good next step opportunity in my real estate career. And then at the same time, I got an unsolicited offer to purchase the company, and everything just kind of seemed to line up, and it was one of those opportunities that it was like I felt like I've missed out on opportunities in the past, and this is something that was right in front of me, and I didn't want to pass this one up.
That makes sense. It does. You know, when one door closes, another one opens, and right. I've always believed that, you know, that's the way life is. It does line up that way for you. And sometimes it's funny. I had a guy one time that I was after for 5 years to come to Lifestyles. I finally got him to come. He was the vice president of the second largest real estate management company in the country. So I thought, man, this is a perfect guy for this. And so I said, we're going to go out and buy a bunch of apartments, and I'm going to let you operate them since you're an operations expert, and I'll buy them since I'm a buying expert, and we'll partner together. So we did this deal. We were getting ready to close, and we were like 30 days away from closing. And he calls me up one day laughing his head off. He said, Del, you won't believe what just happened. I said, well, tell me, what's going on? He goes, they just fired me. I said, what? 30 days before you're going to quit, they fired you? I go, why is that funny? He goes, because they gave me 6 months worth of severance to leave. I go, oh, my God. What perfect timing. So I love it. I love it that you had that lucky shot. You know, that's a good thing, Scott. So talk about, were you looking for this before you sold that company? Or when did you first look into doing real estate?
So probably around, you know, real estate is something I've known people have done. I've known people that own rental houses, but always thought it was out of reach. You needed, you know, I didn't know the way that you have taught us how to buy, starting out in single family homes. You know, we thought we needed the 20% down and all the money for the rehab and all the stuff. And so it was just always out of reach. And so I knew it was something that's been very powerful for a lot of folks. And when my wife and I met in 2015, we both were interested in real estate. And so we came across you on the radio. We listened to endless bright radio and podcasts and everything else, and then decided to go for it. And when we showed up and went to one of the meetups, and then went to the 2-day, and it just all made sense. And we realized this is something that we can actually do while we still work both full-time jobs and have kids. And so it really showed us that opportunity that we can get into these houses for much cheaper than we thought. And so then, of course, that just grows from as you scale and add more single families. It's just natural to move into the multifamily.
Yeah, we call it the natural progression of a real estate investor. Mm-hmm. The first time you showed up, just out of curiosity, I mean, you gave us a little bit of information there, but I'm looking for something a little deeper. You go to the 2-day seminar. And invariably, I've been teaching for 35 years. I look in people's eyes and I can see it. You know, we go to lunch that first day. It's like, boom. Wow. Now I get it. And I call this the aha moment. Do you remember your aha moment when you go, yeah, this makes sense. This is for us.
Yeah, it was actually the 2-day and you were teaching it. And we went to the single family, obviously on the first day. And when we learned about how to do with hard money loans and how to finance and roll in the rehabs and things like that, and realize that we can get into these houses much, much less than we thought. That was really the aha moment. It's like, wow, we could buy 4 or 5, 6 of these houses today and be able to cash flow and replace like our mortgage basically through cash flow, replace car notes, these things. And that was really a big aha moment for us.
So you embrace the chunking theory right away then, huh? That you go after your problems piece by piece?
We do, yeah. And that was kind of a financial, the way that my wife and I kind of looked at things financially was through chunking and understanding, you know, if you have this income coming in, if you're making $2,000 a month, that's covering your mortgage. If you get another $2,000, that's covering these bills. That's kind of the way we've always looked at a lot of our expenses.
Yeah, that worked for me. It was very logical for me. I thought, hey, man, look at this money coming in. I don't have to go to work for that piece anymore.
Right.
What was funny is when I first started the chunking theory type thing, was that I go, I'll never pay my house note ever again. Mm-hmm. These little rental properties over here are going to take care of that puppy for me. I'm done.
Exactly.
Right. Then I go, let me get some for a car. Let me get some for food and gas and electric. And yeah, that worked out real well. So you bought your first rent house when? What year?
I think it was probably in 2016. So we bought one in 2016, and then we ended up having 8 total over to about 20. We bought them over the years. I think the last single family house we bought was probably in 21, I believe. So we had them, and we bought and sold a few over the years.
What areas were they at? Were they in Houston?
All of them around the Houston area. So we had some in Spring, some out on the northeast side. We have some in Missouri City, but mostly all around the Houston area. The suburbs.
So you subscribe to my theory, which, of course, if I taught the class, maybe I rubbed off on you, hopefully. But my theory was that most people don't find good real estate deals because they're looking for a deal right next door. And there is no great deal next door. The deal is wherever the guy is that's willing to take a loss. You know, the guy that's up to his butt in problems and he needs to get out and wherever that's at, north side, south side, east side, west side, I'm going to go there and save that guy's butt and make some money off doing it. And that's the way I looked at it. So that's why I was able to get so many different deals, because I'd look everywhere. And I think you did the same thing. That's very good.
Yes,
how long did you what was it? Okay, now you're going through this house thing, and I see you're building your portfolio and you're working through it. And life goes on, and we have to understand. Everybody out there has to understand this. You don't just start building a portfolio and then that's all you do. No, you're still living your life. You're still going, getting up with your wife and your kids each day. You're still doing everything. But you see the future now. Now you see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's starting to grow. Somewhere along the way on that tunnel with the light down at the end of the tunnel, you saw a different flashlight sitting over here called passive investing. When did you start seeing that light?
Yeah, so we started, I believe we started our first passive investment was in 2017, 2018. We went to one of the expos when it was in Houston, and we went through the multifamily mixer and met a bunch of the leads at the time, and we really connected with one lead there.
What was it that was important to you when you started looking at passive deals? Was it the deal itself, what type of deal it was, how good the return you might get from it, you know, the quality of the returns, or was it the person that was doing the deal? What did you look at, and what mattered to you?
It was really for us. I mean, of course, all those are major factors, but I really think the person is very important. I believe as a lead myself and invest with other leads, I think if you have a good, solid lead that's going to communicate, honest, is going to do the hard work, and is going to take on the challenges, that's the person that's going to get the deal done.
Okay. So you've actually done five, I believe, right? Total of five passive deals?
Correct.
Let's talk about moving from the first one to the second one. Did anything change? Was there new perspective after doing one?
Absolutely, yeah. So we were very slow. So we invested one. We wanted to watch it go full cycle. And kind of hindsight, we wish we would have done more. But, you know, we were a little like, okay, let's just take it easy. Don't throw everything at it. And also, you know, that time we didn't have a whole bunch of money to throw into it. So so we put in our investment into the first deal, and it went full cycle, and we made a nice return. And we rolled all that money plus some into that lead's next deal. And we just kind of kept rolling it forward was the plan. And then then at this point, we just started investing into additionals after that.
So how many different investors or leads are you with now?
We're with four, I believe.
Four different ones. And are these deals located where? Are they spread out? Are they all in the same area?
They're all Texas market. So we mostly, there's some in Bryan College Station area, and then some down south, kind of Texas City, Galveston, Nacogdoches, kind of spread around, but within the Texas market.
How long were you a passive investor before you started getting the itch?
Yeah, it was probably about 5-6 years. I was doing that, but I was also had my business that I was running, so that was a big focus. And so passive investing was an easy option to put that money into.
That makes sense. Okay, so you've got your earned income over here. You're busy earning income.
Right.
The passive worked, but then the unsolicited offer came along. But there had to have been the itch before the unsolicited offer, I would think.
Yeah, there was. So actually, one of the leads was one of my pest control customers. And so we would spend a lot of time talking. I'd go over his house. We would sit down and talk. And he was a lead and still is. And so we kind of walked through kind of the day in the life of a lead. He took me out to visit all of his properties, opened the book, showed me what it's like to be a lead. We went through everything. And I was like, okay, this is what I want to do next. And so we're kind of going down that road. And then when the unsolicited offer came, it just was like, all right, we're going to do it. And he was willing to step in and help kind of guide me through that and also be the KP on my first property.
That's an interesting way to get into it. I don't know if I've actually heard that story since a long time. I mean, I think the T&L, back when the really early guys got together, they all kind of – each one introduced the next guy into the group, and they all got walked through it like that and, you know, got their hand held the whole entire way. So that is pretty interesting. What I found out there, and I'll see if there's even a little inkling of this in your thing, is that you're sitting there as a passive, and one of two things comes to mind, and this is without being arrogant or insulting, either one. But you say to yourself, it doesn't look that hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go, I think I can do that.
Yeah, it's I know there's definitely challenges, but when you're running a business and then you're also running, you know, managing a bunch of single families all over the city, when tenants are moving in and out and payments and multiple insurances, mortgages, all that to keep up with, when you kind of consolidate it down to one single location, it helps to kind of be a little more efficient and streamlined. That does come with its own set of challenges, of course.
Yeah, that's true. I remember when I first started having multiples, and it really did make the whole thing a lot different. In fact, the one that made the most difference for me, now your apartment that you own, that you're a lead in, is a 36 unit, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I remember having a 30 unit, and in a 30 unit, I could afford to have a manager. And I had like a part-time maintenance guy. He wasn't full-time. When I went up to 64 units, I had a full-time manager, full-time maintenance man. And that was really like, boom, it. It was, I had a professional manager that knew everything, probably knew more than I knew about how to operate, you know, on a daily basis, or as much anyway. So I didn't have to really be involved at all. And then the maintenance guy knew more about maintenance, like by 10 times, 100 times right. more than I knew. So, I mean, he could fix anything. I used to joke with the guy, say, you know, and the guy did. He made rocket ships, you know, these little rocket ships kid played with. But I say, you could be a rocket scientist, you know. And I used to always joke, what's the difference between a rocket scientist and a maintenance man? Because a maintenance man can fix or build anything if he's really good. And and we used to joke and say, it's the tattoos and the alcohol. They can't get up and go to work every day at the same time every day. They're covered with tattoos, and they are just living a life that's completely different.
Yep.
And that's why they don't go to work for the big paycheck and wear the suit to work every day. You know, it doesn't work. Having said that, now, you decided to go into being a lead investor. What year did you start that? When did you buy your property?
So it was December of 24 is when I received that offer, and that was kind of the time I was talking to the lead about it. In 23, December of 23, we kind of decided to start making that transition, and then sold the property and or sold the business in April of 24, and then also became a lead at that time, and then started pursuing the property, and then we went under LOI in October of 24, and then we closed on our property in January of 25.
Excellent. Moved along pretty quickly then, huh?
Pretty quickly, correct.
When you were doing the due diligence on this, did anything surprise you?
No, I don't think so. So we had a lot of really good information up front, and definitely had our mentors and operations consultants were involved to help us and know the right questions to ask and what to look for. So when we went on the due diligence, we didn't really find any surprises. Everything was pretty much as expected.
Okay, great. Well, that's an easy one then.
Sorry, I don't have it more complicated.
No, that's fine. I just find that when you go through and something works out really, really easily like that, it really gives you a lot of momentum mentally. Were you really positive that it worked out that well?
Yeah, I was. I mean, it definitely was a lot of uncertainties. You don't know. This is a big step for us. But being within LU and seeing that everyone else has done it ahead of you, we knew we had the path to follow and could do the same thing.
Makes sense. All right, time for another break. We'll be right back with Scott Sessoms and the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments. Looking for a better way to build income and take control of your financial direction? For over 30 years, Lifestyles Unlimited has helped people learn how to invest in real estate and use it as a tool to build income and create new options for the future. Right now, you can join for just $297, a discount of $443 off the regular price. Text RADIO to 88007, RADIO to 88007. Once again, text RADIO to 88007. You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. With me here today is Scott Sessoms out of Richmond, Texas, and he has done single-family housing, and he has done passive investing, and now he's a lead investor, and he's sharing his story with us, and we're happy to have him here with us today. Scott, let's talk about going in there and buying this 36-unit apartment complex. You bought it out in Nacogdoches. You live over here in Richmond by me. Tell me how you manage and operate this property effectively from being so far away.
Sure. So yeah, it's 36 units, so we don't have any on-site staff, but it is a pretty well-maintained property, so it doesn't need a lot of day-to-day maintenance. And living here, it is a three-hour drive, but I do go and visit the property at least once a week. So I drive up, spend time, meet with the residents, check on any maintenance issues that need to be done, and then try to do as much as remotely as possible. So I do everything online, all my leasing online, do, you know, communicate everything through there. And so far it's been working really well that way.
Did you buy this from a Lifestyles member or from somebody else?
No, so that's a great question. So this was actually a mom and pop operation. So this is one of those classic properties that you try to find. So it's a 1980s vintage. Mom and pop owned it for 25 years. They took really good care of it, a lot of maintenance. They took a lot of pride into the property, but they weren't running it like a business. They were running it like a mom and pop operation. So they were, rents were very low. And it just needed us to come in and turn the knobs and do what we do to really improve the property.
Now, I think that's a really interesting conversation. I think we should have it. Is what did you see that you quote unquote considered the mom and popping of an apartment complex that you saw the possibilities to change to improve? Other than the one that the rents are low, which is usually the case in a mom-and-pop situation, because the mom-and-pops have what I call the secret handshake. I don't think I've ever shared you the secret handshake, have I?
No. No.
The secret handshake is when you go and you meet your tenant, you go, look. And you don't even have to say a word. It's amazing. You can read it in each other's eyes. The handshake is this. If you never complain about repairs, I will never raise your rent.
I think that happened there for sure.
I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? It's like, yeah. I don't want to see you. You don't want to see me. Let's just agree to not talk to each other, right?
Yep.
And, you know, I won't bug you, but please don't call me every 6 months and tell me my rent just went up, right? That type of a deal. And it goes on. And if you find people in each, you know, you got 36 units, so it takes you X period of years to come away with 30 of 36 people that believe that. Now you've got that core base that never move and you never raise their rent. And you never worry about your place because it just rocks money in every month. You've got a low basis because you bought it for nothing. You bought it for half of what you're selling it for now. And you just let money rock. And how do I know all that? And it's just one of those things where.
Exactly what it was.
If no one calls, sure. There's no problem, right?
Right.
Think about that. If the tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear the tree fall? No.
Yeah, no.
That becomes the way the mom and pop thing works. So other than that, other than the, okay, we won't raise your rent thing, what kinds of things did you see that mom and pops leave out of the equation?
Yeah, so there was so the rent was one of the big factors. They weren't charging pet rent. So out of 36 units, I believe we had 10 or 12 pets on the property. So there was no pet rent. They weren't really charging late fees. And fortunately, with this property, we really don't have any delinquencies. Pretty much everyone pays on the first. But every now and then, one person will slip. And rubs, they were just rubbing back very minimum water. So they were pretty much just rubbing back a very small flat rate back to each resident and not truly capitalizing on the rubs. So that was a huge, huge earner. And also they weren't really managing expenses. So their electricity bills, I was able to go in, renegotiate the electricity contract for the property and cut it down by 2/3. So those are just a lot of savings in areas that they were just happy cash flowing. And then kind of to your point, when we took over, they did really good on maintenance, but there was a few issues that was just kind of like drippy faucets, things like that. Again, as you know, a dripping faucet runs up your water bill. And they were kind of the residents like, hey, we're not raising your rent, so we're not going to replace your faucet. And we got there. I'm like, well, I'm replacing your faucet and I'm raising your rent. So we'll do both. And they're happy
expensive
for it, though.
Faucet. You know,
sir?
I said expensive faucet.
Yeah, exactly, right? So there was a lot of that. And it was just kind of when you're looking at the property, like I said, it was a 1980s vintage. So it had all of the right mechanicals in place with a PVC sewer and copper line, wiring and all pitch roofs. So it just had everything that kind of checked the boxes for it. And it just needed to be operated more efficiently.
Did you do any upgrades at all? Was there any place for upgrades in this deal?
Not really. We did some exterior stuff that the lender required us to do. We had some retaining walls and some driveway work to do and a little bit of exterior siding work. But the interiors are pretty well maintained. There's most of them are some type of vinyl or wood flooring or tile and granite countertops. We do have a couple residents that do have an original unit. They have been there since the mid-90s at that property. And their units are immaculate, though. They look like little time capsules when you walk into them. It's carpet, wallpaper. You know, it's the butcher block for mica countertops. But they're like in perfect shape. They're nice.
Unbelievable.
And they're happy to live there, and they don't want to leave. So
that's
I'm
an
happy
amazing
to
thing.
Them.
Us folks that live in the upper echelons of the world, and I know where you live now, and you live in a nice subdivision. And when you live at the level that we live at, you have no idea that people out there are just happy to have a box to live in, you know, that doesn't leak, that the AC works, the water runs. That's all they care. I was laughing with a guy the other day, and it's another very successful guy, and we were talking about where we live in. My wife cuts in and goes, you know, if I wasn't with him, he'd live in a box under a bridge. And the guy goes, I would too.
Yeah, right.
You know, give me 400 square feet and a TV. You know, that's all I need, man. We were talking to her nephew. And he's just going to college, or he's just getting his first job here in Houston. He's from San Antonio. So she helped him find an apartment and everything. And she wants him to get a really nice apartment with all these amenities. And then she wants him to help pick out furniture and all this stuff. He goes, I said, Aunt, no. All I need is a place to put my computer. And they don't even use TVs anymore. Kids don't even use TVs. They watch TV on their computer. He says, let me have a place. And he said, get me a bar stool so I can sit up at the bar and eat. And that's it. And she's like, no, you need this and that. And then I go, Melissa, stop. They don't need any of that stuff. I go, I would live in a box. And he goes, yeah, a box would be nice. I go, I like mine with windows. But that's really the point I'm getting to. Long story, just being fun. The long story is that when you get into housing, like you're in blue collar housing, right? Clean, functional box, and they'll never leave unless they get a new job somewhere else or, you know, they have to move. Other than outrageous things, they don't even like to change their lives. People stay the same 10, 20, 30 years. I wake up every time and my car's 10 years old. I don't know. You know what I mean? You drive your car. You like your car. It doesn't break down. It's a nice car. You take care of it. It lasts. You wake up 1 year and it's 10 years old. And you're like, what? You know, the same thing with your house. I woke up in my house and go, you know, I've lived here 14 years. 14 years. I bought this from a guy who was brand new. The year it was built, he had to get let go of it. And I bought it. And now it's 14 years later. I go, God, this house is old. I've been here 14 years. And so that's the point I'm making about housing is so easy. Here you got 36 units all the way out in Nacogdoches, and you're able to operate that property with very little problem whatsoever. My overhead lighting went out, so you're just going to have to look at my shadow for the next segment until I can go get another battery here to turn that lighting back on. So now that you operate it, do you do your own accounting?
I do. So I do them all in accounting, own leasing, bookkeeping, everything. So we do have, of course, have a CPA that helps, you know, with tax time. But besides that, I do all the accounting. And that was, you know, come from a small business and stuff. And I was, manager in the past. So I've dealt with a lot of budgets and accounting before. But this was definitely a little different animal than what I was used to. But it was something that it was adaptable to learn.
Do you have anybody close by that, if there was something to happen, could get out there and look at it for you so you don't have to drive 3 hours to get there?
Yeah, so I do have a part-time maintenance guy that is on call. So he's just an independent, but I call him out. He helps with any maintenance issues. He's always available. And also there's other leads in the area as well. So we do help kind of look after each other's property if something were to come up.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I used to always tell people, they go, how do you have these things all over the place? I go, well, if there's a fire, don't call me. Call the fire department. I'm not going to come put the fire out. I don't know what you think's going to happen, right? Well, what if there's a flood? Well, first of all, you're going to see a flood coming for weeks and ahead, and once it's there, I can't get the water to go away, right? So you think, well, what is it that you really need me for, you know? Someone got shot. Call the police. You know, it's, when you really think about it, there shouldn't be an immediate needs in these situations. However, what I found in my 35 years of doing this is that when you have people living in a single family environment, they envision that they don't have all that help. They got to figure all that stuff out themselves. Once you put them into a multifamily environment, for some reason, they feel like that there's this guiding angel above that watches everything and takes care of everything for them.
Yeah.
But I just want to ask you a question. Do they feel that way when there's no on-site manager, when there's nobody that ever shows up? Do they still have that feeling?
They seem to do pretty good. So we had an issue, just kind of an example. So it, I also have a lot of older residents there. And so I think they just come from a different generation and they're able just to be a little more self-sufficient. And we had an issue one time, the city cut the water main. And so we lost water to the property. And so I'm obviously in Houston, so there's not much I can do. I can't fix the water main, but I had a maintenance guy go out, deliver cases of water to all the residents, and then some of the other residents, they went to the store and bought 5-gallon jugs of water, and we're all helping each other to, you know, mm-hmm. flush toilets and do what they need for water. So they actually kind of stepped up and took care of during that situation where I did not necessarily have to rush up there to, like you said, there's nothing I can do about it. So, we do what we can to kind of mitigate, but...
How does the city shut your water off, and what do you do to get them to turn it back on again?
Well, they broke the main line, so it got cut. So then we had to get plumbing out there and all that, and they couldn't get out till the next day to fix it. And but we communicated with the residents. We sent them communication, kept them updated as we were working with the city and through all that, and they appreciate that. I mean, it always comes down to communication with them.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've got a lot of stories like that, and it's always amazing that when the going gets tough, people get tough. They get things done, you know. It's amazing. They help each other out too. They really do. Yep. And it's amazing how the younger people help the older people, and the, you know, the men will help the women where necessary, and the women do what they can do. And it's really cool. Let's talk about your future. You've got this one now for how long? How long have you had this?
A little over a year. So about January of 25.
Okay. Where's your headspace now? You're a year into this. Where's your headspace? Where are you going with this?
So very happy with my decision. I'm very happy with the decision to be a lead, and I'm looking for my next opportunity. So looking to grow. So the current property we have now is 36 units, looking to grow to kind of that 60 to 80 unit area. Again, I'm open. This is my full-time job, so I don't mind the drive. I'll go where the property and the numbers make sense.
Okay. Very good. Look forward to seeing you. Are you going to buy another property?
Yes, sir. I'm actively looking and want to continue doing this, get a second, get a third, and just keep moving.
How does the kids think about this?
Yeah, they're great. So kind of a quick story. So when we had our single family houses, we were kind of using that to pay some of our bills. And then we kind of flipped and said, you know, let's help the kids grow some of their nest eggs. So we started taking the profits from the single family and put into a brokerage account to grow their accounts. So they have something to start off when they, you know, when they graduate high school or go to college or whatever. And when we bought this apartment, I explained to them kind of how passive investing works and how that looks, and you can put money in and you don't have to do anything. And so they're like, well, we want to do that. So they actually each gave, you know, we talked to them and said, look, here's the kind of money you have sitting in your account. And they said, well, we want to invest as well. And so we took money out and invested through us into our deal to where now they are kind of passive investors through us, and they get quarterly distributions and they love it. They're always asking, Daddy, where's my check? Yeah, so we we're trying to teach them that there's other ways to make money, that, you know, if they choose to go to college, that's great. But if they want to do a different path, you know, we can show them that as well.
Excellent. So I see you have a picture of your wife behind you and your kids. Smart man.
Yes.
You haven't talked much about her. What does she think about all this so far?
Oh, she is, she's awesome. So, when you're asking about accounting earlier, she is in accounting. So she is my go-to numbers person.
Gotcha.
You know, yeah. So definitely married up when I found her.
Does she still work, or is she just working with
yes.
you?
Yes. She's my W-2 sugar mom, is what we say, until we can get her retired.
Yeah, no doubt. Having one W-2, and it's always a good thing to have around. It doesn't hurt. It's just the fact you've got other forms of income, and you've got the ability to buy back. Have you been able to spend time with your kids that you couldn't before this? Or I guess you really were self-employed before, so you could pick your own times anyway, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, being self-employed, I was working. So if I wasn't working, I wasn't making money, you know, which takes me back to your kind of your analogy you always do with the ladder of interdependent and dependent type of thing. I've kind of been following that path without knowing I was following that path. And so I definitely was working a lot more with the business. But now, just as an example, my kids both had field trips the last 2 days, and I was able to go with them on their field trip.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. Hey, Scott, thanks for coming on. And, you know, we're going to have to meet up sometime. We live this close together.
Absolutely.
I don't know where you hang out. You got to be hiding somewhere because I've never seen you. So for the rest of you out there, remember this. It's not just the money. It's the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.